Mike McEntee, congratulations. You have survived another week of the Trump administration. It is Friday here on the Mike McEntee Show, AM 950. And to celebrate not just that, but other good things, we're going to be giving away tickets to the Blue State Ball. Yep, as Matt was promising last hour, I've got a pair of tickets. And you and some lucky person could be going to the Blue State Ball. We'll be giving you the phone number to call. We'll be doing a little bit later on the program, so don't call now, but we'll be giving them away. And, maybe you can go. March 10th. March 10th is the day. And if you don't get the tickets today, well, you can get them online at am950radio.com. We're also today, we're going to pick up the conversation about guns and teachers. We had so many calls on the phone yesterday. It just overflowed into our voicemail. So I've got a few of those that will play out here for you. Perhaps you have more to say today. We'll kind of continue that conversation. And yesterday at the legislature, not only was there a big rally, you heard about that, but what you didn't hear about, and we have posted up at the AM950 Facebook and over at the Uptake Facebook, is one Democratic representative confronting two of the Republicans who chair the committees that have been refusing to hear these gun bills. They've had these gun bills for a year and have not given them even a hearing. It's polite, but it's kind of dramatic, and I thought you might want to hear that. If we have a chance, we'll play that. I'd like your thoughts on it, as well as we're going to be talking about the big elder abuse problem that's come to light here in the state of Minnesota. What's behind it? Hear some of the stories and what some of the solutions might be on that. But first, let's go back to that story that just has been dominating everything here the last couple of days. President Donald Trump suggesting that teachers should be armed, and we've heard from a lot of folks on this issue that it's not a great idea. A few have thought it's good, but most people don't. Donald Trump today was at the CPAC, that's the Conservative Political Action Conference. There we go. I think I got all the words in it. And Tim Mayer from Talk Media News was there. Tim joins us now. Hi, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a long day at CPAC with President Trump giving his speech, but you talk about CPAC and what it has become. This is supposed to be the marching orders where Republicans, conservatives go to get their marching orders, sort of have a kumbaya, and find some harmony with the party. But the gun issue dominated CPAC and basically hijacked this conference. Donald Trump didn't help much, as he said in the opening, that he is advocating giving guns to teachers, administrators, and training them how to use them. It's easy to say that, Mike, but there's so many problems with that. Would that actually stop the students? Where are they going to put the gun? Where are they going to put these guns? Are they going to carry these guns? We had a deputy there who did not respond appropriately, who was trained and did not respond quick enough. And this incident probably could have been avoided. A lot of these lives could have been saved if that deputy responded quick enough. And he had a gun.
And that, Trump talked about that, and he talked about it in a very strange way. He said the deputy didn't know and didn't love the children, apparently trying to draw a contrast to teachers who he thought would know and love the children. But, if somebody's trained with operating a gun and that's their job.
Yeah, and there's two things. You can own a gun. And we were discussing this today. And you can be trained how to use the gun, the safety and everything. But when it comes time to actually having to pull the trigger is a different thing, especially against a child who might be carrying a gun. That's a decision that people have to be able to make. If you're going to basically own a gun, you have to understand the gun is there not just as a deterrent, but you're going to actually may have to use it sometime. And can you use it? And that's spur of the moment. So I think there's, my personal feeling is that there's a lot of things that can be done in the schools technology-wise to make schools safer, including, video cameras and all kinds of different types of things that they can do for surveillance and searches. And, some of the schools out in Baltimore now are installing, metal detectors to come in for students to come into the school. But there's a lot of different things that can be done. And I think another thing that can be done is, you know, we've come a long ways where the principal actually knows and the administrators actually know the students' names, know about the students, like community policing, where they actually get to know these students, you know, so they can try to prevent these things. When you have cops, like, walking the beat, the reason they walk the beat is to know the community. So basically they can, you know, have somebody to talk to, tell them what's going on, and when something happens or is about to happen, they're tipped off.
Mm-hmm. Are we finally seeing some daylight here between the Republican Party, the conservatives, and the NRA? Because first we have, today we had Florida lawmakers, Governor Rick Scott, backing a proposal to raise age limits on assault rifles from 18 to 21, something the NRA is against. We have Donald Trump saying we should do something about background checks, something the NRA has basically been against. Is there a schism finally here between the NRA and the Republican Party?
There is a break right now. I mean, we had the NRA speaking yesterday, but there is a break right now among many Republicans, and I think it has a lot to do with the 2018 election. But this incident, you know, Sandy Hook was just terrible and a tragedy, but this incident has really energized kids. We have kids coming to Washington, D.C. saying they're tired of getting shot in school, and they want grown-ups to do something about it. And I think it's an interesting thing, but I haven't seen something like this since the 60s, where actually the kids are pushing the agenda, saying, look, do something. And I think some Republicans, and particularly in some states, they're finally listening.
It's going to be interesting because the 2018 politics, everybody's under pressure. A lot of congressional races are, you know, in swing districts. Not a lot, but enough are in there that the House could be flipped, and people are paying attention to that.
But more than that, it's become a financial thing also with NRA. You saw that where the rental car companies are saying no more discounts for your NRA membership. So, I mean, and that's a huge thing because the NRA people do travel to a lot of conferences, rental cars, and so forth. So, I mean, there are corporate America is stepping up into the plate on this as well. And we see what happens when, you know, when people themselves say, you know what, if somebody supports a particular group or organization, we'll start to boycott it. And I think there's a fear of that right now. If companies come out and support the NRA and so forth, they're facing, you know, massive boycotts in some of the stances that the NRA is taking probably in the last 15, 20 years at this point. It's becoming painfully apparent that the NRA is placing profits ahead of people's lives.
Now, President Trump was at the CPAC today, and just like every other campaign-like speech that he gave, he talked about the wall. He said he is still going to have the wall. Where are we with the immigration issue, with the whole DACA issue and the negotiation?
DACA right now looks like it could be dead. I mean, this is going to supposedly expire in March. The Republicans, and particularly Trump, is holding the Democrats and blaming the Democrats, hoping this backfires on them in 2018, saying that Democrats have failed to present anything to the president to sign on DACA. And right now, it's not moving at all. It's a stalemate right now. I mean, you hear a lot of people saying we're close, but inside we're finding out that really it's nowhere closer to where it was almost a month ago, when we were just basically nowhere with this entire DACA situation. So that means potential deportation of, you know, 800,000 plus people who basically don't even know. This is the country they know, America, United States. They don't even know the country they're being deported to.
Do we have a still potential government shutdown hanging on this?
That I don't think is going to happen, Mike. You know, because that thing is, as much as some people say, well, let the government shut down, it does have a ripple effect. And I think both sides are not going to let that happen at all. So, but I do believe that the DACA thing is close to being dead, unless there's a last savior moment by either the president, who comes out and says, I'm extending it, or is doing something like that. But right now, even the president, you know, has come out and said, it looks like it's dead.
Hmm. Now, the other late-breaking news today was Donald Trump's former campaign aide, Rick Gates, decided to plead guilty. That figures into the whole Mueller investigation and puts pressure now, I believe, on Paul Manafort. What's going on there?
This is a huge case because there is dozens of additional charges that Manafort faced that they charged him with, and they charged Gates too. But Gates wrote a letter basically that was leaked out to his family that, you know, at this point he didn't want his family to go through this turmoil because he stood to lose. Well, he stood to lose and spend a lot of time in prison if he was found guilty, plus, you know, basically be financially broken completely, where he was going to lose, you know, lots and lots of money. But the interesting aspect, this is probably the highest level person who is like, you know, inside this campaign, and what information he's going to provide now cannot be good for Manafort. Now, Manafort has come out and said they're going to go to trial. They still think the charges are bogus, and they're going to fight it. But this is like your number two guy saying, you know, enough's enough. You know, I'm testifying. And he's going to be one of the major witnesses against Manafort. Hmm. But what they don't have the connection to Trump yet. And that could come. But right now, as it is, there is no evidence still that prosecutorial evidence where they can get Trump on a collusion or obstruction at this point, although it looks and appears to many people that he obstructed based on what he did to Comey and other individuals. Mm-hmm. But right now they still don't have enough to go forward. But squeezing Gates and having Gates talk some more, who knows where that's going to lead.
Now, of course, another big story that's been brewing here is this whole interim clearance thing at the White House. I think Trump was asked today, is Jared Kushner, who apparently has interim security clearance, that's what they call it, if he loses that, is he going to get a waiver? And Trump just basically waffled through it and then basically said John Kelly will answer that question. But you say there's no such thing as interim clearance.
I did PSYOP work for the Pentagon at one point in my life, and I had a top secret clearance. And I started, like, basically when they kept saying this interim clearance, like, what exactly is that? You can't look at top secret stuff or secret stuff unless you're cleared. So it's kind of a word that's being tossed around that means nothing. He's not allowed to look at classified information, period. You know, I mean, there is no level of, you know, you have secret, you have top secret, and then there's, you know, with polygraphs and so forth. So, you know, I'm confused exactly when the White House says, well, he has it's interim. It means it's in transition, probably, where he hasn't been cleared at all. So, you know, that's an interesting concept that, you know, has baffled me, that nobody's really asked about. What exactly can he look at with an interim clearance, meaning he hasn't been cleared? So obviously you can't look at TS stuff, or you can't look at secret.
Yeah, we don't have that thing that's in Men in Black where you can zap somebody's memory afterwards. Sorry, you didn't get clearance. We're going to have to zap your memory. That doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, Weiss also throw it around. Nobody's asking questions. It's generally most people in the press have never gone through a clearance level or any type of aspect like that. And, you know, I had a distinct pleasure of going through a clearance situation a couple of years back. And, you know, one of the things when I was, you know, just to talk about clearance, you know, and Michael Flynn, and they said, you know, Michael Flynn may have lied or, he was charged with lying to the FBI, and there's things about his clearance that he wasn't confronting or talking about. When I interviewed some of the people that do these clearances, they said they were scared, Mike. They said they were scared because they felt they would be charged because they were derelict in their duty not asking Michael Flynn the right questions or doing the proper investigation into Michael Flynn. And I'll give you an example. With me, when they tried to clear me, I came back first. There was a little pause where they weren't going to grant me clearance. And a second investigator called me back because I had a lot of people that visited me from Scotland. And I had two young kids at the time, and they were getting soccer lessons from, semi-pro people from Scotland. And it was like soccer camps. And I'm sure you have that. I'm sure you have that as well out in your state, but, you know, these people, British people come over and they teach kids soccer and so forth at these camps. So the clearance, the people that are doing my clearance, said to me, they called me up, said, Tim, you have all these individuals staying at your house and they're from Scotland. Do you have more of allegiance to Scotland than the United States? Of course, I asked them, well, I didn't know if we were at war with Scotland at this point. So, then I explained to them, of course, that this was just unbelievably ridiculous because there were coaches that were teaching my children how to play soccer. So that's how thorough they were with me. Now, they weren't as thorough with Michael Flynn. So, that'll be interesting to watch out if there's any fallout among the people that have done clearances in the Trump administration. What they do is they contract with a federal contractor out to do these individual clearances of individuals.
We're speaking with Tim Mayer. We're talking about what's going on this week in the Capitol. And one of the stories here that caught my eye was Ohio Governor John Kasich, who was a candidate for president, of course, last time around. He's talking, or at least there's talk, that he may be running in 2020. The question is, how is he going to be running, independent or Republican?
Well, there's talk that, there's some discussion that, if Donald Trump chooses not to run for president. Now, there's some people saying, he just might not run, for multiple different reasons. And he may, depending on what happens in the investigation and the fact that he might want to just return to his business world. If that's the case,
Timmy there? Yeah, Tim, I think we're losing you a little bit there. Your phone connection's going a little bit bad.
Okay.
Are you still with us? There you go. Let's try that again.
Are we still, how's this? A little bit better?
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
Okay, so what I was saying is if Donald Trump doesn't run, John Kasich probably will run as a Republican. But if Trump enters in the race, Kasich is now looking at the running as an independent. And that's one of the situations that's at the Republican convention last year. And I got to say that his campaign didn't get much steam last time around, but he was well-liked among Democrats and Republicans.
Well, after this last Republican, Kasich looks like a wonderful choice, I think, for probably a lot of moderate Republicans right now. So, hey, Tim, we got to run here, but I appreciate you checking in with us. We'll check in with you next week. Tim Mayer is executive editor over at Talk Media News. Hey, Tim, thanks for the time today.
You bet. Have a great weekend.
You too. All right, we're going to take a break here, folks, but when we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation about Trump's arming the teachers. We're going to hear some more comments from folks. If you got some thoughts, 952-946-6205. You're listening to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950.
Your home stinks. What, you didn't notice? Odds are you're immune to the smells in your home, but the stink is definitely there. That means it's time to bring out the pros from Zero Res to clean out the dust mites, dander, and bacteria festering in your carpet. This month, you can get 3-room Zero Res clean starting at only $119. Plus, this month, you can still get a great deal when you get your air duct Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. Happy Friday to you. Yesterday, we were having quite a conversation. Our phone lines just about exploded when we started talking about Donald Trump's proposal for arming teachers. There were a few people who thought it was great, but a lot of people did not. And a lot of folks who called ended up going to our overflow voicemail. So I wanted to play back just a few comments from folks that didn't make the air. And then if you've got something you'd like to say, and I see our phone lines are already filling up, 952-946-6205 is the number to call. Now, Harold from Savage is the first one up here, and he said he had an idea of what you really needed to do if you're going to deal with a problem of, school safety.
Hi, this is Harold Christensen from Savage. I know this sounds real militaristic and stuff, but everybody's talking about how to protect these kids, and we really need to protect the kids. This may sound silly, but I'm thinking, you know, what about National Guard, a couple of National Guard troops? They can take shifts. They're already being paid. And be part of their training to protect our kids in the school. I know people don't want to see that, but I don't want to see any more kids get killed. That's just my thought. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't want to see more kids get killed, but I think the problem is that a sustainable solution over time? It brings us kind of down the road to just militarizing our whole society. And I think that's something that we're trying to avoid. But Harold, you know, good point. That's something that might be there as a temporary solution if you're trying to do something. Another caller here pointed out that teachers, if you're giving them guns, they're going to need more than just guns.
They're talking about arming the teachers with guns to be safety, to save the school. Well, are they going to give them armor body too? Because that's what cops wears, and that's what the people who shoots up the schools and everybody face, they wear their body armor. So are they going to give them body armor to go with the gun and when the bullets for the school teachers? Because, it does sound ridiculous, right? You could pass that along. And thank you.
Yep. Add that to your school supply list for back to school. Bullets, guns, and, bulletproof vests. That's what the teachers will need to buy because, of course, they have to buy all their supplies right now anyhow. 952-946-6205. The phone lines are full here, so we'll ask everybody to kind of be brief. We'll start with Mark from Fridley. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike, I want to provide a solution, but I'm former military combat, military police and corrections, and I've trained expert in more than five weapons, including a ballistic shotgun. But I know people that shoot frequently with a handgun that will miss their silhouette standing still target. So, you know, Trump's idea is a joke, and you saw what happened to the cops. Second, as a good whistleblower, I want to tell people what they can do right now. What they need to do is call their local fleet farm and tell them they nor their family members will ever buy another product from Fleet Farm until they can open the Sunday supplement and see a Fleet Farm ad that isn't talking about AR-15s and Bushmaster assault weapons. And for those people in the NRA, I'm not worried about the hunters or the people that have taken firearms classes. I'm worried about the people that are hunting people. And what we need to talk about, Mike, is how the FBI let this happen. And again, with our politicians, we had a thing called Columbine, and we're still talking about this. So if 98% of the population and 98% of the NRA want mandatory background checks, want to have waiting periods, and also we got to talk about the gun show loophole, why can't we ever get that done? Why do the people get what they want? Why don't we get national health care? Why don't we get gun control? When we said 95% of us, 99% of us said we don't want to bail out the banks, why did the banks get bailed out? When do we get what we want, Mike?
I think it's going to depend upon getting people elected who are going to listen to the people, because a lot of people who are elected are dependent upon the people who have the money who'd like to make, who are pushing for exactly opposite of what you want there.
Wait a minute, Mike.
Yeah.
Columbine was in the 80s.
Right,
you know,
I know.
I mean, we did, you know, we've had decades of this same issue, and for some reason, the people aren't able to elect people that are going to do what 90%, the supermajority of Americans, want to have done.
I had a Republican texting me on Twitter today saying, well, what's changed? What's changed? And I pointed out to him that it's gone from, you know, 40, 50, 60 to now 80 and then 90% of the people saying something needs to change. We have reached what absolutely is a tipping point, and you can't ignore it anymore. And Mark, you made some great points. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. We're going to jump over here to Brian in St. Paul. Hi, Brian. You had some thoughts on this topic or something else?
Yes, Mike, a couple of quick things. I can't disagree with anything from the previous callers, and the one caller enlightened me a bit. The National Guard thing is not a bad idea, but in as much as the militarization of our society, we're already there. It's just intensifying. The incident in Florida, the recent school shooting, the guard was, if the facts are correct as reported, I don't want to prejudge him, but it sounds as if he deserted his post and he should be prosecuted like a soldier deserting in war. However, his cowardice may have been driven that he only had a 9mm pistol and that kid had an assault rifle, and he would have been way outgunned. And the police used to go around with 38 revolvers in major city departments, and the reason being is they didn't want their bullets going through the walls of houses killing innocent people. Mm-hmm. They had to up the ante as the cycle keeps continuing. The Aussies stripped their society of guns, and it was not without growing pains. Any big change comes with growing pains, but you adjust and you go on with it. And I think the police should have a monopoly, like Scandinavia and much of Western Europe, Australia, and Japan should have a monopoly on that type of force. Thank you, Mike.
All right, Brian, thank you very much. You bring up Australia. Coincidentally, President Trump today was holding a news conference with the Prime Minister of Australia, and somebody said, hey, you got rid of all your guns. Have you talked to Donald Trump about that? And basically, he said, well, we just don't want to interfere in your politics because you have this constitutional amendment. You have a very different situation. And just like, please don't ask me about that with Donald Trump standing next to me because we're trying to make a trade deal or whatever they were trying to do at that point. Margie from Eden Prairie has been hanging on the line. Hey, Margie, you got some thoughts?
Hi, how are you?
I am good. Yourself?
I am well. One thing I would like to bring up is that any kind of change like that comes about in a school district needs to be approved by a school board.
Exactly.
And I can't imagine that any school board on the planet would think that this was a good idea. The liability for a school mm-hmm. district to arm teachers, and what teachers union would think that this is a good idea? It's just preposterous.
I have not heard from any educators who have said this is a great idea. I don't think I've heard from any. And I agree with you on that point. There might be a few school boards in some places like Oklahoma who think this is a great idea, but no, not in Minnesota for sure.
But the logistics of doing this are just ridiculous. It's just not going to happen.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It's logistically it won't happen. But the thing is, it's made to move the discussion to that point, and it's exactly what we're doing today. We're talking about it, and that's why Trump suggested it, and it's taken us our eye off the ball, which is we need to get rid of the guns. I mean, that's the problem. You have too many guns out there. And that's the gun culture and everything that drives it. If take a look, where you take away the guns, where you don't have the guns, we don't have the problem. I mean, it's unfortunate we haven't been able to even do the research because we don't have the money for that, or that we don't have the funding for that from Congress anymore. So good points, Margie.
This is such a grassroots effort that I think that this may be a situation, if it continues with the momentum it has now, that it can supersede money. And, of course, the money involved with the NRA, and if they lose a lot of advertising, then that'll force change as well.
All right. And we got to run here, Margie. Thank you so much. We'll take one more call here from Saul in St. Paul. Saul, you had some thoughts about the gun issue we're talking about.
Yes. I just wanted to point out the fact that, you know, this is not a third world country. You know, we don't need to turn our schools into a war zone. The NRA effectively wants to do that to the entire continental United States. They would love it if this was a, you know, Mad Max type of a dystopian future where you would need a gun to survive. It, you know, shoes, car, and a gun. No. This is not a third world country, people. We have not gone through two world wars and been a world leader just so that, you know, people are carrying guns on school property. No, absolutely not.
No, we're America. We're better than this. I think that's the answer to a lot of folks when they say it. We're better than this. Good point, Saul. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. We will pick up this conversation. We know that we're going to be talking about this more, but we do have to take a break right now. And when we come back, we have a guest I want to talk to about a topic that has gotten a lot of attention in the newspaper and up the state capitol. This is elder abuse. It is sickening, some of the stories that we've heard here in the last this week and in the last couple of months about what's happening. We'll talk about what's being done about it. That's all coming up here next on the Mike McEntee Show after this art beat.
This is Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz with Connections Radio Show, and I'd like to bring you cool art that's happening around the Twin Cities. This week, I'm talking with Ross Hackenmiller, who is the Worship Arts Coordinator for the Hamlin Church United Methodist. And you've got a 2017-18 music and art series, don't you, Ross?
That's correct.
So tell me about this cool Lumina Women's Ensemble.
Okay, well, they are putting on a concert on Sunday, February 25th at 2 p.m., and they are a professional women's ensemble dedicated to the mystery, beauty, and hope inherent in music. And they present music in a wide variety of styles, and they're a four-piece vocal quartet.
Yeah, I'm seeing in your note that you sent me that they've got medieval chants, Renaissance motets, folk songs, traditions, and works from local composers.
Yeah, they really focus on trying to provide a wide, eclectic variety of music. This concert they'll be putting on the 25th is called The Veil and Thorn, and it's specifically devoted to music for Lent. And specifically, all the songs that they pick from a wide variety tell the story of the Lenten journey through the eyes of Mary. A lot of the time, we focus on Mary in the Christmas season, but not so much in the Lent season. So they're hoping to do that.
Can you tell me a little bit about some of the musicians that will be there?
Well, it's a four-piece women's ensemble. There are two sopranos and two altos. The sopranos are named Kim Suoka and Angela Grunstead, and the altos are Claire Osowski and Linda Teschelmeyer.
And I understand this event's not ticketed, but a free will offering will be suggested.
Yep. And fortunately, most of our concerts and events in the art series here are free will offerings. So we're more focused on bringing the arts to the community than anything else.
Well, tell me, there's two more that I want you to talk about that are happening in March.
Yeah. The entire series goes through May, but the March events that will be happening are one called Speaking Like Light. It's an interfaith poetry and music event, and that is on Thursday, March 8th at 7 p.m.
And that's spiritual poetry from around the world, right?
Yes. Yep. It's an event we've had in the last couple years. And this year, it'll specifically be focusing on the great Sufi poets, such as Rumi and Hafiz.
Cool.
So we're looking forward to that.
Cool.
And on March 24th, Saturday, March 24th, at 7 p.m., the Minnesota Boys Choir is going to stop by, and they're presenting a program called Walk Together, Children. And both of these upcoming events are also free will donations.
And tell me again the address and how to get there.
We are located at 1514 Englewood Avenue in St. Paul, Minnesota. And we're just right up Snelling Avenue in St. Paul. It's easy to access from 94 if you just go north on Snelling Avenue. And we're right across the street from Hamline University.
Well, terrific. Thanks for joining us today. That's Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis, and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
6 years ago, Dr. Emily Stein was confronted with a life-changing situation. Her grandmother developed rheumatoid arthritis and was unable to maintain her own dental hygiene. Unfortunately, her assisted living facility didn't have the resources to help her maintain her dental health either. Once her dental health deteriorated, her overall health deteriorated too. It wasn't long until she had multiple tooth extractions and a severe stroke. That's when Emily put her Stanford background in microbiology and immunology to work. She created an oral care lozenge, or Smart Mint, that manages oral bacteria to promote strong teeth, healthy gums, and fresh breath. Daily Dental Care is a life sciences company dedicated to addressing public health by targeting the root cause of dental disease. Because let's face it, we all could use a little extra help supplementing our daily dental care routine. Visit dailydentalcareswithans.com or go to Amazon to purchase our lozenges and use promo code DDC95002 for a 25% discount on your first purchase.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Daily Dental Care lozenges are not intended to replace daily dental hygiene practices.
Mike McEntee back here on AM 950. Elder abuse. Minnesota's Department of Health is apologizing for the failure to protect vulnerable adults in nursing homes and assisted living centers. Minnesota's problem with elder abuse came to light this past fall when the Star Tribune ran an investigative series on it. This week, lawmakers heard heartbreaking stories from adult children talking about the abuse their parents had received physically, verbally, and psychologically from people who were supposed to be taking care of them. They also heard about a system that when problems get reported, no one seems to care or to act. Joining me to talk about the problem and what's being done to solve it is Mary Jo George, who is an AARP Minnesota Associate Director of Advocacy and the chair of a work group on elder abuse. Mary Jo, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I watched this hearing at the Minnesota State Capitol this week, and I've seen the stories, but until you hear people talking about this and you see the pain in their eyes, you don't get it. Just finally, it hits home about how bad some people have had it. How big is this problem that we're talking about here? We just got a few bad apples in the system, or is this systemic?
Oh, absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. It was just so heartbreaking to hear the families, and I think some of the, you know, the anguish that they're facing, but I think we do believe it is a problem that is systemic and not just one or two bad actors. I think what we have known is that the Department of Health had received about 20,000 reports and allegations last year. And so we think it's really important that we obviously have to fix MDH and the processes by which they're enforcing some of our laws, but we think it's going to take more. And so the consumer work group that was appointed by Governor Dayton looks really at some broad systemic changes. And we really have four areas that we are working on. And one is really to look at strengthening and expanding the rights of older vulnerable adults and their families. So, for example, we want to strengthen our anti-retaliation laws, because one of the things we heard in the hearing was that people are afraid to speak up, because if they speak up about poor quality of care, they're often targeted and oftentimes be told to have their loved one move somewhere else if they don't like the care. So we want to stop that kind of behavior. The second thing we want to do is enhance the enforcement mechanisms that families and older adults can take if they are abused. And so that requires, we believe, more ability to use the courts to redress some of the victim or some of the harms that people have suffered. We also think we need to strengthen our criminal laws. Today, you know, if an older adult is traumatized, there was one family member who talked about how his mom was terrorized with a lighter, and they mm-hmm. were talking about, you know, wanting to start her on fire. Those people, it doesn't rise to the level of a crime because there was no demonstrable bodily harm. So we need to change laws like that. But then the third thing we really want to do is license these facilities. In Minnesota today, we are an outlier. We are one of the few states that doesn't have a license of these assisted living. And we license things like tattoo artists, and we license dog kennels. We think it's time we need to set standards so that we can protect people and to provide quality care. So in addition to the improvements to the Department of Health, we do think we need these other systemic changes to our system.
Now, during the hearing, we not only heard from family members who are talking about this, but we also heard from caregivers who are emphasizing that it's not all caregivers who are like this. There are just it's certain ones. I wanted to play something from one of them. This was Joanne Fontaine, who is a caregiver, and she told the committee that she thinks one of the root causes is workplace culture that she blames on the management of the care facility. She talked about an incident where the nursing assistant threatened an elderly resident with a balled up fist. She said she was still new on the job, so she had another nurse go talk to the nursing assistant, and this is what she said happened.
So he went and talked to her, and I asked him, did he plan on writing up a report in regards to this? And he said no. He said because if he did, everybody would be mad at him. And he said the reason why everybody would be mad is because they would all have to go home without pay for a week while it was under investigation. And he told me if I reported it, I'd be in trouble too because they'd all be mad at me. Well, I don't care. I went and told the nurse manager, and the lady still stayed on the floor and worked, and she still works there.
So is this typical what's going on where we have this kind of attitude, this kind of workplace culture?
Well, I think that what we saw in the hearing is that many people are saying that that is happening. So you're absolutely right. We have to get at that, the workplace culture, and we think we can do that by changing some of our laws. Some of our anti-retaliation laws need to be strengthened so that staff are not disciplined if they report. We have to have better training so that management would be taking that staff aside and letting them know that that wasn't appropriate behavior. We don't want to just place all the blame on the workers. This is really about management and staff working together. I think as part of our requirement for assisted living licensure, we would call out for different standards in staff training and staffing levels. Because if there aren't enough staff, you see that there are problems because they get worn out, or there aren't enough people to cover the shift. And so people are tired, but we have to create a more positive culture. Absolutely. We are very, very concerned about that.
We're speaking with Mary Jo George, who is with AARP Minnesota. We're talking about elder abuse that's come to light here in the last several months. Now, since this all started when the Star Tribune did its story, the Human Services Department has been working with the Department of Health investigators to get through a huge backlog of complaints. This seems to be like one of the sticking points here. Why? I mean, it just seems to speak that the government doesn't care about this. Why did we end up with a huge backlog of complaints, nobody looking at them? Do we know why that is?
Well, I think there has really been real problems within MDH. For example, they were on a paper system. And so clearly we need to bring them up to speed and get them into the modern age and have a computer system. But again, I think we have to look more at the prevention age and have a computer. Why are they getting so many complaints in the first place? What are we doing to stop and prevent abuse. One area that MDH also works on, in addition to the enforcement, is the licensing division. And today, the staff that MDH has only has the ability to survey once every 3 years these assisted living facilities. And we're calling for more annual surveys, because what we want to do is make sure people are out there and doing the right thing at the right time. And so we think this is more about not only just the enforcement, but also the prevention. So we're calling for improvements to MDH and the enforcement. But again, if we have that many reports, we think we have to look at what's the breakdown in these systems and what can we do to change that. So that's what we're hoping to do.
Now, some of this stuff will take funding. We know that government funding is always a problem. Would funding fix some of this? Is it just that we need to change the laws?
Well, I think it's both. You know, I do think that the department needs more funding to be able to do more surveys. Absolutely. I think we probably have to look at investments in how are we paying for people who are on our Medicaid program, the elderly waiver program, because right now these assisted livings have no requirement to take people who are poor. And what's happened is some families spend their lifetime of their savings, and then when they get onto our public program, there's no requirement that they have to be served in these assisted living. So we've got to figure out what is the right model so that we can ensure that people are not discharged and sent to homeless shelters from assisted living. We have to kind of quit thinking of these people as just people living in apartments getting services, but that in fact they are older and vulnerable adults, and we need protections, both in terms of discharge protection, so that they're not just allowed, you know, these facilities can't just discharge you for no cause. And that's what's happening today. Many people with some of the stories that you heard in the hearing, many people's loved ones with dementia were being evicted out of places not once or twice, but three or four times. That's extremely debilitating for those people. So again, I think it's going to be a combination of increased funding, oversight, and beefing up some of our laws. It is a serious problem. It's a serious public health crisis, and we need to do something this year. So we're really urging your listeners to contact their legislators and really ask them to support some of the consumer recommendations that we're calling for. We don't need just, small incremental reform. I think we really do need some broad systemic changes at this point.
We've been speaking with Mary Jo George. She is with AARP Minnesota. Obviously, elder abuse, a problem that's not going to be fixed overnight here, but it's something that now that it has our attention, we can probably do something about. As she said, contact your legislator, because it's on everybody's minds, and a little bit of push is going to push it to the top of their agenda. Mary Jo, I appreciate your time today for talking about this very disturbing but important topic.
Well, we really appreciate the time, too, so thank you.
All right. Folks, we're going to take a break, but it is giveaway time. We have two tickets to the Blue State Ball to give away, and we're going to give it away to caller number 3 today. 952-946-6205 is the number to call. If you are caller number 3, you and a lucky friend of yours will be going to the Blue State Ball March 10th at the Blaisdell. So, call now, and we'll come back with the winner, I hope, here in just a few minutes.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul, or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Anytime is the right time to update your music collection, so stop in at the Electric Fetus and browse their massive selection. You'll find everything from rock and pop to international and roots, and so much more, on CD and vinyl. Not only is Electric Fetus the best stop for music, but they also carry a wide and unique range of gifts. bath products, clothing, books, stationery, candles, incense, you name it. That's the Electric Fetus at 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Hello. If your taxes from years past are talking to you from the back of that drawer in your desk, it might be about time you answered the call by making a call to Moe's Tax Service in St. Paul.
Time to come out now.
They've been preparing tax returns and creating advisory-based relationships with their clients since 1971.
Kind of stuffy in here.
Problems with the IRS don't go away by ignoring them. Call Moe's Tax Service. That's M-O-H-S. They're on Ford Parkway in St. Paul. 612-721-2026. 721-2026.
Mishad Kuli Erickson, a mechanical and electrical consulting engineering firm in Minneapolis, supports inclusivity by designing spaces for all user groups, honoring inclusivity and respect. These spaces include gender-neutral family restrooms and nursing mothers' rooms. For example, Mishad Kuli Erickson has designed lactation rooms for traveling mothers at the MSP International Airport. Designing these spaces has changed the expectations of similar facilities in airports around the country. Mishad Kuli Erickson designed safe and comfortable environments for occupants who are their number one priority.
Hey, welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. We have been, the phones have been ringing off the hook. Everybody wants tickets to the Blue State Ball, and no wonder, because we've got a great guest coming. We've got Norman Goldman, who's up here just after the news at the top of the hour. Tom Hartman, Matt McNeil is going to be there. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fry is going to be there. Are you going to be there? Well, Gail is going to be there, because Gail got a pair of tickets to the show. To the Blue State Ball. I think Gail's on the line. Gail, you're lucky. Where are you from?
St. Paul.
St. Paul. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Who are you taking with you?
I'm not sure yet.
Oh.
I was not sure if I was going to go or not, but now I am sure.
Now you are sure. So now all your friends, you're going to be very popular amongst all your friends, since if I assume that they listen to AM 950. They'll be hitting you up and saying, hey, Gail, I'm your best buddy. You're going to take me, right?
I think so.
Well, wonderful. I look forward to seeing you over at the Blue State Ball on March 10th. Thank you so much for listening.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Congratulations. Again, the Blue State Ball, March 10th. There are VIP tickets if you want to be there early to kind of hang out and rub shoulders a little bit more closely with Norman Goldman and Tom Hartman. Those are on sale over at am950radio.com, as well as the general admission tickets. Those are up there. That starts at 7 o'clock as general admission. There is going to be there's some snacks. There's drinks, there's a bar. It's not an open bar, but anyway, it's a great party, and you can wear anything. Well, no, you should wear something. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. See you Monday. Back on Monday. We'll talk to you then.